1460 WVOX.
Stay tuned now on 1460 WVOX for The Ballot Box with your hosts Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin. The Ballot Box is a monthly program brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Now, The Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
Good morning and welcome to the final Ballot Box of 2022. I'm Tamar Tate and I'm joined by my co-host Nina Lubin. And we're coming to you on behalf of the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle, courtesy of WVOX, 1460 AM, and our talented sound engineer, Gerald Bell. So, how are you, Nina, on this winter solstice, shortest day of the year?
Hi, Tamar. Good morning, listeners. I think I'm probably following suit with much of the East Coast and the Midwest preparing for this roller coaster of almost shorts and sweater weather coming up to a drop down to the teens, as we just heard on the news. So doing the usual prep. And you?
Wild. Great. I really do not like having like 3 hours of daylight in which to be outdoors. But I guess the bright side is the days will start getting longer again after today. So that's great. But we have a really wonderful show today for our listeners. Nina, why don't you introduce our guest?
You bet, Tamar. So folks, a little over an hour by car from where Tamar and I now sit in New Rochelle's WVOX studio, you will find Marist College in Poughkeepsie, New York. Within the college is its Institute for Public Opinion, a research center that since its inception 40 some odd years ago, has regularly surveyed public opinion at local, state, and national levels. We, of course, see opinion polls around election time, and many of them. But Marist polls delve into far more than politics. In addition to candidate preference polling and presidential job rating polling, Marist polls cover topics that include favorite baseball teams, job salaries and conditions, family finances, and even non-vital but surprisingly interesting opinions such as, one of my favorites, what the public thinks the most annoying word in the English language is.
I can't wait to hear the answer for that one.
we can ask our guest. The morning's guest is at the helm of this polling enterprise, Dr. Lee Mirangoff. He is the director of the Marist Institute of Public Opinion. Dr. Mirangoff received a PhD in political science from MIT, and he is an assistant professor of political science at Marist. His expertise in politics, polling, and public opinion is in steady demand on television and radio. And you can also read his very succinct poll analyses on Twitter at Lee Mirangoff. Tamar and I recently heard Dr. Mirangoff interviewed on National Public Radio and were very intrigued and are delighted that he's found time to join us on WVOX. So good morning, Lee.
Hey, good morning, folks. It's a pleasure to be talking, although I must say I'm a night owl. pollsters are more like vampires who come out at night. This did stretch the reality a little bit when that alarm went a while ago, and felt like the middle of the night for me.
Okay, we will promise to be gentle. As a matter of fact, let me start with a very broad question, jumping in with one of the overarching ones. So, what is the purpose of collecting opinions?
Well, I think first of all, there's a lot of different measurements of public opinion. And at Marist, we do nonpartisan research, so it's independent. We don't do anything for a candidate. We don't do anything for a political party. You enumerated a lot of the things we do do. But public opinion really is an interesting concept, which really was advanced in the 1930s. The systematic measurement of public opinion, where you're able to, based on a carefully selected small group of people, talk what larger people would think within a certain range, certain margin of error, we call that. And the opportunity exists then to put a systematic and scientifically derived aspect of public opinion at the table of decision making, provided for the information, for media, for you know, the public as a whole, on, let's say, you know, candidates and their chances of winning, but also to try to tell the narrative. We get caught up a lot in the horse race numbers, and that's more fun, but to try to talk about, you know, the narrative, what's sort of going on in the public domain. That's what we're, you know, sort of in the business of doing, and hopefully are providing people the appropriate storyline so that they can follow along and have an independent voice to be able to do that.
To know what's going on, I that's clear enough. Would you please clarify for Tamar and myself and others? We hear the word prediction a lot.
Sure.
With regard to polls. Is it fair to say, or should we avoid saying, that a poll predicts something?
Well, I think, first of all polls are estimates. And in an era where so many of the close races that we do poll are very competitive and, you know, kind of like separated by single digits, I think we're better off providing a narrative of sort of where things stand, mm-hmm. rather than saying that so-and-so's going to win by 2%.
Mm-hmm.
So polls really are a snapshot of what the public says, and doesn't really get into the prediction business. Unlike there's a group of people who do forecasting, like 538, Nate Silver's site, YouGov at CBS, the Huffington Post used to do that. And they actually try to say things like, oh, there's a 90% chance that Hillary Clinton's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And those aren't polls, although the people don't necessarily separate the two. But those are people who are using models and sort of putting in their secret sauce to try to really talk about where the race is likely to end up. That's not the business we're in as much as we're just trying to inform the public, and unlike the campaign polls, we're not trying to influence public opinion. We're just trying to provide a voice for public opinion. So the polls aren't sort of some obscure thing. They're really just, you know, the equivalent of saying, well, here's what the public thinks.
Okay, big distinction between people we call poll takers and people we call forecasters.
Yeah, and in the middle, there's a group called aggregators, and those are the people very often people look at, which is you know, things like Real Clear Politics, or you might check the 538 website. I mean, there's places that sort of compile the polls. The problem with those is in a place of like Real Clear Politics, which a lot of people visit to find out sort of where the races stand. They're, a lot of the groups that they include in their averages aren't necessarily transparent, and very often have a partisan agenda. So our poll might be mixed in with a Republican-leaning poll like Trafalgar, who was very active in this last campaign. But they're really a partisan poll, and that's a very different creature entirely, and sometimes the averages of that can be very misleading. So you have the polls, we take the snapshots, you have the aggregators, which sort of do the average of the polls, and then, as you said, the forecasters. And they're three very different things, although it kind of all gets conflated into polls.
Thank you.
This is an education for me, even though I have to say in high school, my part-time gig, and when I was home for college breaks, I actually worked for a local market research firm
Sure.
I was the annoying person who called during dinner time asking for a male between the ages of, 18 and 35 to talk about something exciting like offshore oil drilling and plead with them to stay on the phone because it would only be a few minutes more, and inevitably it led to I very long conversations, and it was a tough job.
It is exactly right. It's not easy, and it's a lot harder where the ways of getting to people in the absence of landlines make it just much more difficult.
Okay, well, that's our break coming up. We'll pick it up on the other side of the commercials.
Let's return now to The Ballot Box with your hosts, Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin, brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Once again, The Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
Welcome back. This is Tamar Tate, and I'm here at WVOX with my co-host, Nina Lubin, and we're interviewing Dr. Lee Meringoff, who's the director of the Marist Institute for Public Opinion. Before the break, we were talking about a vast array of different kinds of ways to measure public opinion, and we were talking about partisan polls and nonpartisan polls, and Lee, I'm just wondering, how can the average person who's contacted for a poll really know what kind of poll they're being asked to answer, how good that poll is, whether it's partisan, whether the information derived from the question answers is going to be accurate? How do we know?
Well, first of all, and that's a very important question in a day where certainly not all polls are created equally, and the motives may be different. And very often you even get campaign polls in the guise of a public opinion poll, so you don't even know that you're being used for, in a sense, to help message and develop advertising from the data you're providing for a particular campaign. They're not going to say, "Hi, I'm from the Jones contest or Jones race." They're going to say, "I'm from Westchester Data Resources" or something like that. So I think the big deal in responding to polls from a consumer standpoint is to see just how transparent the organization is at the other end of the line. What I would encourage people to do, if the phone rings and you decide to pick it up, and even though you don't necessarily recognize the number on your cell phone, you then say, "Look, can I have a phone number to call back?" If it's not a bogus, if it is a bogus or it's not a transparent poll, you're going to find that's going to create all kinds of havoc because they really don't want you to necessarily call back to their phoning center because they're really not equipped to sort of like deal with lots of questions like we're talking today, like methods and how polls get conducted. So the big deal is, if you don't recognize the poll, hopefully in your listening audience, the word Marist sounds like a name they probably have heard of, so that's okay. But if it's the Trafalgar Center or the McLaughlin Research, well, people aren't going to know necessarily what that is. So the safety, the safety cutoff is to say, I'm really kind of tied up right now. Is there a time I can call you back? And that kind of will send the caller to scurrying for cover if in fact they are a more partisan poll. Also, you can ask for their website, and then you can look it up yourself. Again, are reluctant, hesitant, or even the interviewer doesn't even know where that is. Mm-hmm. To recommend it, then it's not only, it may be a legitimate poll, but it may not be a great quality poll. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, you know, use your instincts and use your smarts. No one is required to do a public opinion poll. You know, it is you're being selected, but you know, your participation is not in any way legally or in any way required. It's requested.
Hey, thank you for that very small but really important piece. If people don't know that no one is required to respond to a poll legally or otherwise. Okay, thanks. We've so far been talking about the phone call that Tamar suffered through, the phone polls. But we know that there's in person, there's mail, there's internet. All of these are tools for polling. I'm sure this question is long, but maybe you can kind of summarize for us. What are some of the things that pollsters consider when choosing which tool to use to poll?
Well, that's a very good question, because there was a time, I've been doing this a long time, and there was a time we just used, you know, everybody had a landline phone in their house, so that was kind of easy. We didn't have to make those choices. Then people got cell phones, went through a transition where they had maybe a landline and a cell phone in their home, and the landline phone was, you know, sort of a community phone, but your cell phone was kind of your private phone. And now we've gone to a point where that's pretty much all you got. A lot of folks, older population still has landlines, but mostly people are relying on cell phones as their mode of mode of communication, which is good and bad. On the one hand, you may not want to respond. On the other hand, you don't have to be sitting at home, as you said in the beginning, interrupting someone's dinner. We can call people at any time, in a sense, and do that. The cost of polling has gotten skyrocketing in last year for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is a decision by the FCC to eliminate anything that's auto-dialed, which means you have to manually dial, which is a tremendous slowdown. They're trying to avoid the kind of like automatic telemarketing calls that we all get and love. But the you know, so polling groups, quality groups, have had to come up with other modes of reaching people. You know, people, as you say, they vote differently. They vote on election day. They vote absentee. They vote early. They vote early in person. And so what we're trying to do is develop, and this election year was very successful, thankfully, to develop different modes of reaching people. Mm-hmm. And so you have options like your landline or your cell phone, or you may get just a text on your cell phone to encourage you to go to a link to fill out the survey, off-site, not really talking to an individual. And all those methods have different strengths and weaknesses, but it seems that kind of developing a hybrid method reflects the kind of hybrid way people now vote and seems to work better. And I don't want to get in the weeds too much, but saying who people who vote early and people vote on election day are very different. We have to be very cognizant of the recipe. In other words, how many people do we want to talk to on, you know, cell phones or landlines, and how many people, let's say, do we want to talk to on a text-to-web method, knowing that those groups are going to be very, very different. And just to say 50-50 doesn't necessarily provide the answer.
Right.
So it's a lot of artwork to go along with the science.
Okay. Thank you very much. I do have a science question, but I think it's going to wait until after the break. The chatting goes so fastly. We'll be back with you and listeners after this break.
We'll be right back.
let's return now to the ballot box with your hosts, Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin, brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Once again, the ballot box on 1460 WVOX.
Welcome back. Our topic today is public polling, and we are speaking with Lee Meringoff of the Marist Institute of Public Opinion. And I believe
and
before
Nina has a question.
Nina definitely has a question.
Lee, you mentioned something about science. I'm interested in knowing the people that are creating and executing this. What are the skills, the background, the academics, or backgrounds of people who are trying to get this precisely right? The numbers, the geography. I mean, are there people that work with you that have deep science background, social science background, other academic areas? I mean, your bio reads, you have the PhD from MIT. In my mind, that flags like numbers, you know, quantitative. So for all of those out there that might be interested in working full time, I know you have hundreds of Marist students working for you pollsters, and that's fantastic. But for the creators, for the full time job folks, where do you draw them from? What's needed? Someone might be interested.
Well, what's interesting is it's a field that's sort of very eclectic. And I think if you ask that question to 20 different people who sort of live in my world, you probably would get a lot of very different answers. My friend Joe Lenski, who works at Edison Research, heads Edison Research in Edison, New Jersey, and they do the exit polls that the networks all use. Mm-hmm. And so those are the ones that sort of show you, whether the race is too close or too early or projects winners and things like that. And Joe, his undergraduate major was engineering. And sure, he had a statistical background with that, but just loved politics and got a summer job one year at CBS Election Unit. And that ended up being his career. I don't think I got necessarily trained, although I'm a political scientist, so I'm a little closer to the topics. I didn't really go to graduate school to get trained in how to conduct polls. Mm-hmm. So I think it's people just come from very different fields. There's elements of psychology, there's elements of political science, communication, business marketing. The folks in business marketing use very same methodology. The goals are different, but the way you collect the information might be very similar. So there really is no feeder system, if you will, that says, if you want to do this, this is where you, this is the route you should take. And the people who work with us at Marist, I think, there are some people who come from a media background, communications and are into social media and the like. Some of those people who work for us are really hand-grown and they're Marist alums, so their training really occurred as undergraduates. Mm-hmm. At the Institute for Public Opinion where we are. People come from all different places, and as you say, there's a scientific, quantitative, statistical basis to this, but there's also a huge part of it is just the interpretive, writing questions that make sense, assuring quality control in terms of how you collect the data, and then analyzing it in a way that provides a clear pathway to what's a good survey, hopefully, or what ends up a good survey. So there's no really one-size-fits-all in this.
Okay.
I just wanted to add quickly that the program at Marist is an educational program. We're known for our polls, but as you say, there's several hundred students, and they take coursework, they do internships. Go to New York City. We go to the New Hampshire primary every 4 years with a couple busloads. So it's a very different, you might know us because of the numbers, but it's really a educational program at Marist.
Understood.
I think it must be interesting how you refine each question. I know back in the dark ages when I was calling people with public opinion questions, I could actually tell which way a person sometimes was going to answer by whether or not I stressed certain parts of the question.
Sure.
And my tone. I mean, there's a lot of psychology that goes in. There's actually a lot of psychology that goes into trying to keep people on the phone to answer these questions. I'm curious, how hard is it these days to hook just one person to participate in a poll by phone these days? Like, on average, how many numbers do you have to call?
Too many. It's hard to reach people. The cooperation of people who stay on the line once they're talking to, you know, a college student, we don't have the slam down of the equivalent slam down of a receiver as many times as you think. Most people say, gee, if I got called on a poll, I'd never do that. But then when it happens, you know, the students and at any reputable polling organization are very well trained. Our students go through 4 hours of training, and then they are also monitored by more upper-class seniors who've been through the trials and tribulations of doing survey research. And they get monitored and get offered feedback. So the process is a much more controlled environment, if you will. But students are taught how to enlist people's support and also how to present the question so you don't get into the problem that you had where, you know, your voice inadvertently might sway some opinions, but we certainly want to keep that to a minimum. We tell our students to smile when they dial because people are more likely to respond to someone who's enthusiastic and, you know, engaging. And we then, once we get people to participate in the survey, then you have to just reassure people that, you know, we're 60% done and, you know, we have another 3 minutes. And, you know, look, here's the bottom line. You know, we're in there living in a very tough time, politically. But people have opinions and they want to share them. We've had times where we've had national tragedies and we've been amongst ourselves kind of debating, is this an appropriate time to do a survey or maybe we should hold off for a while. But whenever we tend to jump back in and try to provide a measurement of that, when it's like right after the bombing at 9/11, for example, you know, you have to be sensitive to the fact that what's really going on in the real world is impacting the process itself. And so you have to understand that that is a reality. But, you know, and then you do a survey, you know, let's say a week to 10 days after 9/11, and you find out that people really have a lot to talk about. And it's just the opposite effect. In fact, in that particular survey, not knowing what we were going to get, I remember our response rate was really the highest we'd ever had because people, you know, first of all, some people were at home, as has been the case during COVID, where obviously we're reaching people, you know, where they are, and where they are tended to be home. And so they were happy to talk to anybody, even us.
Lee, when it comes to election polls, I know there are cases where we've seen discrepancies where maybe 2016 was an issue, you know, but she was up in the polls, but she or he was up in the, you know, he was up in the polls. What happened? So first of all, I'm wondering if you can identify some glaring cases and when those discrepancies occur, what might be the reasons for them?
So when you're doing a poll, you're making a lot of judgments. Judgments about how you're going to select the sample. Judgments about the questions and how they're put together. Judgments about how the interviewer itself is trained to do this. And certainly judgments about how you interpret the data. So different organizations are going to come to arrive at different conclusions to those questions. And as we say, not all polls are created equally. And it really is a buyer beware industry.
Brings us back to the opening. Okay, we have our last break coming up, and we'll see everyone, we'll hear everyone on the other side of it. Thanks so much, Lee Meringoff. We'll be back.
Let's return now to The Ballot Box with your hosts, Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin, brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Once again, The Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
Welcome back. We are speaking again with Dr. Lee Meringoff from the Marist Institute for Public Opinion. And before the break, we were discussing discrepancies between poll results and election outcomes and why those discrepancies might happen. And I actually have a couple of questions about that. I'm curious, well, first, are there certain demographic groups that are harder to reach than others? And if so, how that affects your organization's ability to get random representative samples? And
she was jotting down these questions furiously.
So my chaser to that is, if the answer is yeah, have you developed methods to compensate for that?
Yeah, there's a mystery to the process, but if you think about it, it's a very commonsensical answer to a lot of the questions. So, yes, there are certain populations that are harder to reach. So the answer to that might be people who are more mobile, people who, just by social demography, less eager to participate. Some older people may find it intimidating. So we have to be very careful about that process, because the last thing we want to do is be, getting people agitated about the very process, which is an opportunity for them to voice their view. Put in a positive way. So we might have to, spend more time reaching what we call hard to reach population. For example, we do our interviewers, we have our interviews conducted both in English and Spanish, because there's some people who will be more comfortable answering in Spanish than they might in English. Their views count as well. So we are very sensitive to that. That aspect of it, and do make efforts. And I think our switch to just different modes of collection, younger people are going to be more eager, perhaps, to do a text to web survey where something shows up on their cell phone and they're invited to then go to a certain location, a certain link, and then respond that way. So in a sense, we're trying to expand the modes of communication to compensate for the fact that it just got very hard and very expensive to do what we had been doing successfully, but making it more difficult. And also, you want to be able to do multiple surveys. So last week of the presidential campaign, we did polls in Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Arizona. And we also did a national poll in that week as well. Because, you get closer to Election Day, you want to make sure you're getting most of the critical surveys done during that time, approximate time of a survey. I should also just add one other sidebar on this. Although Marist is an hour away from where you are, I actually live in North and Westchester, so I'm home right now, and I'm a lot closer to where you are.
Okay. that's nice. That's folksy. That's nice to know. So what you're talking about, Lee, actually speaks to the strength of hybrid polling on one single question or topic. I imagine that if you want seniors, in that 70, 80-year-olds in your group, you got to have something more than a cell phone or an online question.
It's, yeah. It's, Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right. So you want to have a variety of ways that, and find the one that they're comfortable in. And people do like to have choices. So if you're providing a choice, then you've got somewhat of an attraction. But you talked about discrepancy of different polls. And to me, and my way of thinking is, you know, if you have 8 or 9 different polling organizations, let's say quality ones, nonpartisan, independent measures of public opinion, to me, it's always amazing, given all these steps and judgments, that the polls come out very similar or as close as they do, rather than why are polls different. From kind of like a student of this, I look at it and say, well, you know, if you look at organizations, let's say, measuring Joe Biden's approval rating right now, you have half a dozen organizations using related methodologies, but different kind of formulas, elements of different things and making judgments along the way. And yet you find his approval rating maybe between 41 and 45% when you're talking to 1,000 people in the entire country. To me, the common sense answer is, gee, it's amazing those organizations have similar results. Now, again, in a close election, if you're ahead by 1 point or you're behind by 1 point, statistically, that's well within the margin of error and doesn't mean anything numerically. But if it race ends up that close, the one who's on the plus one side as opposed to the minus one side is the one who's going to end up taking the oath of office. Editorially, it makes a big difference, even if statistically who's ahead by a point or two may not matter. Statistically, you have to be very sensitive that you really want to be talking about even if it isn't a prediction, you look a lot better if you have the right winners. Recently, in the Senate race, in the Fetterman-Dr. Oz race in Pennsylvania, we were out there with a 5 or 6 point lead for Fetterman when most people were showing it almost dead even. And I was the only one who really sweat a little bit because, on the one hand, it's good to be different. But on the other hand, you don't want to be wrong if you are. So I've been doing this a long time. So we've had, a lot of, interesting election nights over the years.
Right, I'll bet.
If we have interesting elections, we're going to have interesting election nights.
But you actually, we've been talking so much about election polling, but you actually do a lot of really interesting polling that's not election polling. And I have a question for you about big data and its relationship. My son just took a data analytics class, and I was looking at some of his materials. And I'm curious, in this era of big data, when companies and researchers are able to amass and analyze this constant flow of information about consumers and voters' choices and behavior, I'm curious, is the need for survey research going to be eliminated by big data? Or alternatively, are they discrete sciences that could actually work to complement each other?
Ideally, they should be working in conjunction because they're really different. The big data really deals, as you indicated, with a flow of actual numbers. Whatever it is, you're dealing with a flow of real numbers that are being compiled. Polling deals with sampling. We're dealing with a handful of carefully selected people from whom we generalize to what a larger population might think on a question or an attitude. So they're really very different, different modes of dealing with data. Campaigns sometimes get into big data, but then they better have a polling operation as well. Or they're going to end up missing a piece. And there's nothing wrong about the big data and the analytics teams. but they really shouldn't be conflated with polling because it's mm-hmm. it's a very, very different different creature indeed.
Mm-hmm. I do have a final question about what your thoughts are regarding the future of polling in the nation and where it's headed. But I do want to let our listeners know that much of what Dr. Mirangoff has been discussing can be found online at the Marist Poll Academy, which is a series of, yeah. I believe it's 9 little lessons that move by very quickly and really give a basic understanding of this whole business of polling and the pros and the cons and the quality and the not quality. So again, online Marist Poll Academy, a fascinating thing to do with some of your free time. So trends for the future of polling, if any, and that'll probably bring us to our conclusion.
You know, I would say that, first of all, I appreciate you mentioning the academy because that's another, when I talk about an educational vehicle at the college, that's a way also to provide information. But trends are, it's challenging and will be, as long as the country is very bifurcated in their attitudes, we will remain challenged and hopefully come out on top over time.
All right. Well, thank you to Dr. Lee Mirangoff, director of the Marist Institute of Public Opinion, for sharing his views and insights this morning. Our next show is Wednesday, January 18th at 9 o'clock in the morning here on WVOX 1460 AM. Hope everyone has a good day. Happy holidays and happy New Year.
Happy holidays. I appreciate it. Sounds like you guys provide a good public service, so I'm pleased to be part of it.
Thank you so
much.
Happy holidays, Lee. Bye-bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Season's greetings
from AM 1460 WVOX New Rochelle.